with a positive preparation for disaster. This is Community Alert, keeping you informed about how to be prepared, not if, but when disaster strikes. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on KZSB, AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio.
Welcome to Community Alert, folks. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and we're speaking today with James Howard Kunstler, who is the author of a fascinating book called The Long Emergency. And we're here to talk with him at Surviving the Converging Catastrophes of the 21st Century. And welcome to the show, Jim. Appreciate you being here with us. And Mike, you've got a couple of things you want to cover before we get into the interview.
Well, I just want to welcome Jim to the show and thank him for taking time out. It's kind of cold back there in New York, so we'll get to you in just a second. I want to jump into Goleta Prepare Now, 20 Weeks to Preparedness. We're on week 16. Items to pick up at the grocery store, one box of snacks, one can of meats for each person in your family, one can of vegetable for each person in your family, one box of tissues and dried fruits and nuts. Things to do, find out if you have a neighborhood safety organization and join it, and we've been driving that home for the last year and a half on this show. Develop a disaster supply kit for your car or van. Don't assume that the big one's going to hit while you're sitting at home. The chances for us in Southern California is that we're going to be in our car. And then find out if your workplace has a disaster plan. And there's nothing that says that your employer has to do everything for you. I would suggest you have some of these items that you know you're going to need in your bottom drawer of your desk or wherever you keep those things. To get a complete copy of 20 Weeks to Preparedness, you can get that online from the City of Goleta at cityofgoleta.org or give them a call at 961-7500. Also, Kevin Jeffries last week, Assemblyman from the 66th District, want to thank him again. As I indicated then, the census has started, the 2010 census, the official census day is April 1st. The website for the census, www.census.gov. And the warning notices are already coming out to make sure that the person at your door actually is a census worker.
I think we're going to do a program on that.
Yeah, we're going to do a full program on this. The reason I'm kind of pushing this is, one, it's too easy to run a scam under the umbrella of the census. But the other thing is that the census is very important to us in reality because a budget and an allotment of resources and what have you, particularly in the fire service, actually does come from a lot of this census data. So it is important to us. But let's jump into the long emergency. James Howard Kunstler, welcome to the show.
Nice to be with you.
I came in contact with your book from the director, James Cameron, of all people. He said, Mike, you got to read this book. It's fascinating. And, of course, I followed his directions, and I've read this, and it was absolutely fascinated. A lot of what you talk about is common sense stuff, but it's what captured my attention and why I wanted to get you on the show was because you so clearly think this stuff out to the second and third level, and you don't have the emotion or the political agenda with it. It's just the facts, Jack, which is what this show is all about, and why some of the things that look good on the surface don't really figure out in the reality, particularly when we start getting into alternative fuels. So, but the first big question is, what is the long emergency?
Well, it was written with the idea that we were facing a period of history that would be characterized by hardship and difficulty, and most of all, the discontinuity of a lot of things that we were familiar with, especially comforts and conveniences, and that we would be moving into a much more rigorous and difficult new future.
Now, how does this compare with the calamities and the hardships that human beings have had over the thousands of years, most notably World War II?
Well, to some extent, it's really just another turning of the page, and it's just another discontinuity, disruption in things, change, transition, if you will. World War II was, you know, the whole 20th century was a tremendous convulsion for the human race, but it also occurred during the height of the industrial age, and we were able to recover from it. We had enormous energy supplies, which enabled us to recover from the Second World War. And by the way, the Second World War was really a continuation of the unfinished business of the First World War.
Right. Absolutely.
But, you know, we had the world had this massive supply of energy resources, and they were, you know, the U.S. was really the last man standing in that fight, and we were able to turn their feet, and they did. And, you know, we had another half century of the industrial adventure. And now we've reached a kind of terminal stage of that, where we are facing more or less permanent energy resource scarcity, and also scarcity of other vital resources, including metals and even phosphates and, you know, agricultural things. And we also appear to be faced with issues of climate change, although it's a little hard to tell exactly how that's playing out or where it's going. I'm not convinced that it matters whether it's caused by human beings or not. It seems to be a fact that we have to deal with regardless. And so here we are now in a period of time when reality is going to compel us to act differently and to behave differently and to make different choices. And we really don't want to. You know, we are mounting a campaign to do everything possible to sustain the unsustainable, and it's liable to leave us very disappointed.
Well, that's human nature. I mean, we see that in the housing mortgage crisis, where people are trying to hang on to something that any accountant would have told you were doomed for failure.
Yeah, I suppose that's true, and it's part of something even a little larger, which I refer to as the psychology of previous investment, mm-hmm. you know, which means that you've put so much of your society's wealth into a certain infrastructure for living that you can't imagine letting go of it or even changing it much. And that's where we are, you know, especially where California is concerned. You've invested the treasure of your state in constructing a suburban infrastructure for daily life that has no future, unfortunately. And the future is now here.
Well, I had a conversation years ago with a lady who is of prominent wealth, and she said that once you've tasted true wealth, and that in her definition was when you don't have to worry about what things cost, you don't worry about your cash flow. I mean, it just is not an issue to you, that you never want to lose that. And the mere threat that is being challenged causes you to say, think, and do things that ordinarily you would never do, because you no longer want to go back to whence you came. And I think that's what you're saying here.
Well, maybe. I mean, it depends how you measure wealth. I think that this is more true of just the general comfort and convenience that normal people enjoy, even people who do worry about where their next dollar is coming from. But the fact of the matter is, you know, we don't want to give up the happy motoring and the air conditioning and the, you know, the endless supply of fresh water that seems to cost us almost nothing, and you know, all the immense amounts of food that we are able to get, and the you know, the recreations that we're able to enjoy at, you know, a great cost to, for example, you know, to the environment. And we don't want to give any of that stuff up.
There's something was occurring to me, and we're coming up on a break here in just a minute, but something was encouraging me as I was reading the book, and because there's such amount of information there that's all pointing to an inevitable conclusion. But the idea that we're going to wake up one morning and all of these things are going to be gone is not actually the case. What's going to happen is that we're going to, rapidly looking at geological time or even regular time, we're going to be running out, but we're also going to be introduced to living in a different way, I believe. And do you think that that's the case, that we will have enough time? And I think we're going to take this up at the next segment.
Well, enough time for what? You know, it's here's the deal. It's not about running out of oil. It's not about running out of oil. It's about how the complex systems that we depend on behave as we go down the arc of depletion,
right,
as we go down the arc of scarcity. You know, the oil, so there's still going to be oil there, but as the contest for the remaining supplies heats up and there's more conflict over getting it among the big powers in the world, and more and higher prices for it, and problems with shortages and scarcities, the complex systems that we depend on are going to get into trouble. And these systems can be described with precision. You know, this is not an abstract thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you like, I will be happy to do that.
Well, we'll come back on that. Let's hold that thought right there. We've got to come back to our next break. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working the board, visiting today with James Howard Kunstler, the author of The Long Emergency. His website is Kunstler.com. That's KUNSTLER.com. We'll be back after these messages. This is Community Alert, not if but when, positive preparation for disaster. KCSB AM 1290 or Santa Barbara News Press Radio and on the internet at newspress.com.
I'm Kevin Eider, president of the California State Firefighters Association, here to remind you about the 88th Annual CSFA Conference, San Diego, California, March 1st through 3rd, 2010, at the San Diego Convention Center. Join 7,000 professionals. Attend the most comprehensive fire, rescue, and EMS event on the West Coast. There'll be high-quality education, including more EMS content and classes brought to you by CSFA. A new co-location with CSFA's 88th Annual Conference, resulting in more opportunities and education for you. Hands-on training will prepare you for real-life situations before they happen. For free admission to the exhibit floor and the opening ceremony and keynote presentation, enter promo code FPE3 when registering. Online at www.firehouseworld.com. That's www.firehouseworld.com. Enter the promo code FPE3 when registering. That's FPE3 when registering. Hope to see you there.
Welcome back to Community Alert, folks. I'm Ted Adams, and my co-host is Mike Williams, and we're here today with James Howard Kunstler, who's the author of The Long Emergency, Surviving the Converging Catastrophes of the 21st Century. And we're just getting right into the subject.
Let's just go back to your question and expand on it.
Yeah, so let's just continue with that thought.
It's not about running out of oil. It's about the behavior of the complex systems that we depend on. And you can describe them, as I said, with precision. They are the way we produce our food, you know, agriculture.
Mm-hmm. Transportation.
Which lately really means petro-agriculture or agribusiness, mm-hmm. you know, depending on a huge amount of petroleum inputs. And mm-hmm. so that's one system. Our system for doing, commerce, that's another complex system that we depend on. Lately, we've been doing that mainly in the form of big box shopping, Walmart, and all the things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be done with that fairly soon. Most Americans don't realize it,
mm-hmm.
you know. But the
because of the transportation limitations?
Well, the formulas that that are required to keep running that are simply going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not going to be able to do the warehouse on wheels with the, mm-hmm. incessant circulation of tractor trailers with all the merchandise around the interstate highways when diesel fuel is $6 a gallon. You know,
right.
that's we're going to be done with that.
Right.
We're going to have trouble with the 12,000-mile supply lines to trading partners who are increasingly hostile,
mm-hmm.
Largely because we'll be competing for the remaining energy resources in the world. So we're going to have a problem with that. Transportation is another obvious system that mm-hmm. we depend on, and for us it mostly means motoring and commercial aviation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the airlines are not going to be with us for, you know, another 10 years as we currently know them. If they're around at all 10 years from now, you know, they will be a very elite experience.
Or military.
But people will not be traveling that way. And one of the dumber things that we've done in recent years is fail to rebuild the American passenger railroad system. And I don't mean a high-speed, you know, maglev system. I'm talking about getting the regular railroad back in service again.
Right.
We're too broke to build a high-speed rail network because it requires an entirely new alternate track system. They can't run those things on regular.
Well, I'd love to see the New York Central put back into place with steam again, because I remember that as a kid, and that was a wonderful thing.
Well, I don't know exactly how that's going to work, but we haven't done it, and we're going to desperately need it. And believe me, the American public would be deliriously happy to be able to go from Sacramento to Portland at 75 miles an hour.
Right.
Well, you know, interesting thing.
And that's what we need to do, but we haven't done that. So that's a big thing. the way we inhabit the terrain is a major systemic issue. Mm-hmm. And right now, the way we do that is basically suburbia. That's been our development pattern for the last 60 years. We're done with that. We're done with that project. It's over. We're not going to be building any more of it. And we're going to have to re-inhabit our towns, our smaller cities. Our bigger cities are probably going to have to contract substantially, even as they densify at their centers and around their waterfronts, if they have them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and these are going to work into demographic movements of people, you know, going from one place in America to another place in America as these hardships start to get traction. Suburbia is going to be increasingly problematic for people, and they're going to have to go someplace. I maintain that the most successful places in the at least the next several decades will be the smaller cities and the small towns that exist in a meaningful relationship with places where you can grow food.
Mm-hmm.
And the places where you can't do that are going to be the places that don't do well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix, Arizona is going to dry up and blow away.
Las Vegas.
The excitement will be over mm-hmm. in Las Vegas mm-hmm. for everyone but the tarantulas.
Yeah, the scorpions.
Well, and the scorpions.
So, well, we're looking at. I'm actually on a community board with which is redeveloping a portion of our county, an unincorporated area, and working on the general plan. And it's interesting to me that the planners that are working in this are completely ignoring the situation that you are trying
look
to
at,
put
wrote
light on.
Three books about urban design. My first book that even got close to these issues was in 1993. I wrote a book about the fiasco of suburbia.
Mm-hmm.
It was called The Geography of Nowhere. And I wrote it because I identified the suburban situation as being a multiple problem. You know, it's an ecological problem, an economic problem, a political problem, even a spiritual problem.
And an agricultural problem.
So the trouble is that the people, the officials who are in charge of delivering it are following a set of regulations and laws and codes that mandate a suburban outcome. There's almost nothing else you can do, and they simply will not reform. So my guess is that as time goes on, these codes will have to be simply ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they will be, because we won't even have the money, the affluence to develop according to those
The problem with
patterns.
The codes is that they are actually put in place by the manufacturers, and the manufacturers are the ones that design the codes, and they're the ones that are selling the stuff, and so
it's not really quite like that. I mean, believe me, the zoning codes, you know, there's a long history of where they come from, and look, let's face it, basically it comes out of a consensus that came from the middle of the 20th century, and the consensus was that it would be a good thing to build a suburban living arrangement. And it was, unfortunately, it was a tragic choice, but it was a choice that we made. And it was a choice that we made at all levels. You know, the public made it, their leaders made it, the people in business joined in. It was a broad agreement in society that this would be a good idea. It turned out to not be a good idea, and now we're going to pay the price for it, but, you know, life is tragic.
Yeah, so many good ideas are like that. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned about the issue about rules. We had an assemblyman on last week, Kevin Jeffries, and we talked about how the state has legislated itself into almost inoperability, and that you cannot go anywhere or do anything without rules, regulations, and a preponderance of bureaucracy that you have to contend with, to the point that it's almost unenforceable. And I see that as also being a hindrance in coming up with some reasonable solutions with some of the issues you've dealt with in the long emergency.
Well, California is a case study in paralysis right now, in political paralysis.
Yes.
And, you know, you're now stuck in a gigantic wheel of futility. And, you know, pretty soon things are going to stop working there.
It's already happening.
Then you're going to be faced with the need to make some pretty stark choices.
It's happening right now, and I think this time next year there's going to be a lot of folks with some pretty interesting looks on their faces. We've got to take our next break. We're visiting today with James Howard Kunstler, the author of The Long Emergency, as well as The Geography of Nowhere, also an excellent book. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan on the board today. Community Alert, not if but when, positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and on the internet at newspress.com. We'll be back after these messages.
The views expressed on Community Alert are not necessarily those of the staff, management, ownership, or advertisers of this station.
Join 7,000 professionals at the most comprehensive fire rescue and EMS event on the West Coast. That's Firehouse World Fire Rescue EMS, February 28th through March 4th, 2010. At the San Diego Convention Center in San Diego, California. Gain access to 350 exhibitors showcasing the latest in fire, rescue, and EMS products and services. Meet one-on-one with representatives from some of the best companies in the industry. Discover new products, services, and technologies. Learn more about extending the life of your existing products and equipment, and save time and money during the purchasing process by seeing everything you need in one place. Also, co-located with the California State Firefighters Association 88th Conference, this is Firehouse World, February 28th through March 4th, 2010, San Diego Convention Center in San Diego. For further information, visit the website firehouseworld.com, firehouseworld.com, or to register, csfa.net. That's csfa.net. That's Firehouse World, February 28th through March 4th, 2010, San Diego Convention Center in San Diego.
Welcome back to Community Alert, folks. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and we're here today with James Howard Kunstler, the author of The Long Emergency and several other books about this similar situation, surviving the converging catastrophes of the 21st century. And, Jim, I think we just continue on here.
Well, let's just jump into chapter 4, page 100 of the book, Beyond Oil, Why Alternative Fuels Won't Rescue Us. This was a fascinating chapter, and this is the one that captivated my attention. You've obviously thought past all the politics and the positioning and the bloggers and what have you, and really gotten into the nuts and bolts of why things will or will not work.
Well, there's a great deal of wishful thinking out there, and largely because of the psychology of previous investment. Because we want to keep running all the stuff that we're running. But the truth of the matter is that no combination of alternative fuels that we know of will allow us to keep on running Walmart and the Interstate Highway and Walt Disney World and the U.S. Army, mm-hmm. or even a substantial fraction of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be misunderstood. I'm not against alternative energy. I believe that we're going to try all of them and that we're going to use many of them. But we're going to be disappointed about what they can do for us. And they are not going to alter the fact that we have to change our behavior pretty severely.
And that's not necessary.
That people don't get. The great wish out there is that we could pull together some combination of alternatives and keep running all the comforts and conveniences and entertainments that we're currently enjoying. And it's unlikely to work out that way.
But it's not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't. I think that getting back to, closer knit communities, we've already been talking even before. I mean, I have been before read the book about sustainable agriculture and buying food in your locality and stop, bringing food to, halfway around the world so that we can have everything.
Well, this really gets to the next point. Which is, what is all this telling us? And I think it's telling us very clearly that we have to prepare to downscale all the activities of American life, all the major activities. We have to downscale them and relocalize most of them. The
exactly.
The idea that globalism, as described perhaps by Tom Friedman of the New York Times, that globalism was a permanent part of the human condition, this was a fallacy. Globalism was a transitory set of economic relations that happened during a certain time and place for special reasons,
mm-hmm.
And namely because of about 100 years of very cheap and abundant energy resources and a half a century of relative peace between the great powers. So you get these new trade relations. You know, that period's now ending. We're going to have to grow a lot more of our food closer to home. If we want to have household products, we're going to start having to make them again in the United States, or we're going to do without. And we're going to have to reorganize our local networks of economic interdependence, which, by the way, were exactly the systems that were destroyed by the Walmarts and the large continental and global corporations. So we're going to have to get back to that. And as we do, you know, I think there will be many benefits for us. We'll restore social relationships that go along with economic relationships.
Exactly.
And, you know, people will have to work shoulder to shoulder with their neighbors in ways that they haven't for a long time. And, you know, it's going to be a different way of life. You know, for another example, I'm inclined to think that food production, farming, is going to require a lot more human attention than it has for a while, for a couple of generations. And, you know, that suggests a lot of things. It suggests that, you know, more people will be working in agriculture at many different levels. It suggests that the agricultural landscape will be populated in it and inhabited in a different way than we're used to. You know, mm-hmm. so there are broad implications in all these things.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like organic foods are going to be more prevalent because there isn't going to be the inorganic materials to put into agriculture. So we may be seeing more and more of that.
Yeah, we're going to have enormous trouble with natural gas-based fertilizers and petroleum-based herbicides and all the so-called inputs that we've been, you know, adding to the soil. And you know, we also face a crisis with the soil. We've lost enormous amounts of topsoil. In California, you've done tremendous damage to the soils of the Central Valley.
Yep.
You know, you've brought up the salts and made a lot of the land really unsuitable for agriculture. And we don't know how that's going to work out for you guys.
And then, of course, PVC pipe and all the plastic industry and all that business that's involved in agriculture is going to
sure.
become very
So, you know, the upshot that. Probably is going to be smaller farms and a different scale of farming. We may end up using more animals in agriculture. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know whether it's 3% or 33% or 63% more, you know, but we're going to use more of them because we're going to be running fewer big engines. So a lot of this stuff remains to be worked out. Now, you know, we have to understand that societies are essentially emergent in character, in the strict sense of the word emergence. You know, they self-organize and self-reorganize according to the conditions that reality presents. And that's what's going to happen.
Well, this is all, it's fascinating to me because, like I said during the break, we could talk about this for days. And if you take this away from the politics and from the emotion and you just deal with the facts and you logically think these things out through conversation, you can see how true so much of this is actually going to be. And one of the examples that I see is the hydrogen fuel cell cars. California invested an enormous amount of money and political weight into the development of hydrogen fuel cars. And yet, I don't think there's hardly any out except for the demonstrators. And
this is the kind of thing where, you know, you can demonstrate, you can build a demonstration project. You can show that you can run, you know, 3 of them or 300 of them or 3,000 of them. But are we going to run the entire 250,000 vehicle American fleet on hydrogen? Forget about it.
Well, you can't even figure out a transportation system for the hydrogen, much less the cars and manufacturing.
There are things that are going on now in the background of American life that go even beyond that, and they're even simpler than that. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of us who were looking at the peak oil situation over the last 10 years and have been thinking about how it would affect the whole motoring system, you know, we assumed that the whole issue would hinge on the price of fuel and its you know, its availability, right? You know, how much would gas cost, right?
Correct. Yes, of course.
Okay. Well, there are already, just in the last 18 months, there are two new things that have entered the picture that are suddenly hugely important. One is that we're in a crisis of capital. We've discovered that we're bankrupt at every level, household, corporate enterprise, government at all levels. We're bankrupt. And one of the upshots of that is there is a lot less money for people to borrow to buy cars. And that's how people have bought cars in America to keep the motoring system going. We buy cars on installment loans.
Correct.
And if most people are not able to do that, we're not going to have the system that we have. So that's one thing that's underway now that is just beginning to assert itself. We haven't even begun to see it play out, but it started, okay? Another thing that's going on because of the capital crisis is that our municipalities and our states are not going to be able to keep up with maintaining the roads. You know, we elaborated this monumental series of hierarchy of roadways and interstates and city streets, all of them paved, all of them requiring massive amounts of continual maintenance, and now we don't have the money to do it. And we're going to see that this is increasingly a problem. So, you know, people are going to have trouble buying the hardware for driving, and they're going to have trouble with the roadway system that was engineered for driving. So it's not just anymore about, you know, how you're going to push the car around.
Well, hold that thought, sir. We got to take another break. We're visiting today with James Howard Kunstler, author of The Long Emergency. His website, Kunstler.com. That's KUNSTLER.com. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working the board. Community Alert, not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and at the internet, newspress.com. We'll be back after these messages.
I'm Kevin Ida, president of the California State Firefighters Association, here to remind you about the 88th Annual CSFA Conference, San Diego, California, March 1st through 3rd, 2010, at the San Diego Convention Center. Join 7,000 professionals. Attend the most comprehensive fire, rescue, and EMS event on the West Coast. There'll be high-quality education, including more EMS content and classes brought to you by CSFA. A new co-location with CSFA's 88th Annual Conference, resulting in more opportunities and education for you. Hands-on training will prepare you for real-life situations before they happen. For free admission to the exhibit floor and the opening ceremony and keynote presentation, enter promo code FPE3 when registering. Online at www.firehouseworld.com. That's www.firehouseworld.com. Enter the promo code FPE3 when registering. That's FPE3 when registering. Hope to see you there.
Welcome back, folks, to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And we're here today with James Howard Kunstler, the author of The Long Emergency, Surviving the Converging Catastrophes of the 21st Century. And, Jim, we were just getting into it and talking during the break, and I'd like to get back with you on some of the solutions that are being proposed and the intelligent responses to those solutions, if we could do that.
Well, I like to make a distinction between the two.
Okay.
And as I go around in America to the college campuses and meetings and conferences, you know, there's a great clamor out there for, quote, solutions. But I'm afraid that what I'm hearing is that people, what they're really asking for with solutions is they want a set of rescue remedies.
Your Jiminy Cricket. Your Jiminy Cricket.
All the stuff we're running, you know, to keep on going to the Walmart and everything. You know, I even look, every year I go to the Aspen Environmental Forum, which is attended by the cream of the cream of the environmental movement. And the only thing they want to talk about out there is how we're going to run our cars by other means, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not interested in walkable communities. They're not interested in anything except running the cars by other means. And that's not going to do it for us. It's understandable that we would want to keep our stuff running, but it's just not liable to happen that way. And so I try to promote the idea of speaking of intelligent responses to our predicament, not solutions. Because there are plenty of things that we can do, but they're not based on the idea that we're going to keep running our stuff the way we're running it now.
You mentioned the TED conference. I'm curious what kind of a response you got from those folks.
Well, I don't know. So some of the people seemed to be interested in what I was saying. But, you know, the odd thing was, and this goes back to what I said a few minutes ago, they voted on the most popular presentation for the TED conference that year. And the TED conference, by the way, is this sort of weekend show that's put on for the Silicon Valley venture capital people. And they pay large sums of money to go to this thing, and people like me are brought in as the entertainment, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so the year that I was there, the presentation that was voted most popular was this dumbass presentation about flying cars, straight out of a 1957 popular science kind of idea, you know? And I figured, you know, that's where their heads were at.
Mm-hmm.
And the tragic thing was that this was... These were some of the leaders in American high-tech enterprise.
Yeah, the innovators. And, yeah.
You know, they're sort of stuck in this idea that it's all about how we're, you know, are we going to have cars running on hydrogen? Are we going to have flying cars? Are we going to have plug-in cars? You know, it's not going to be about saving the driving and commuting system. That's not what life is going to be about.
I was just reading this morning about algae and making algae, making oil from algae, and how...
Look, these things are so tiresome. You know, there's a long list of rescue remedies that people are wishing and hoping that we can use.
Yep.
You know, the fact is we're not going to run our stuff the way it's running now on any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to get over that. And there's a whole lot of other things we can do. For example, two of the things that I mentioned. You know, we can put some of our effort and thought and enterprise into walkable communities. And that will come largely from reactivating the existing towns and small cities that we have, that we already have, that are lying there empty and inactive, waiting to be re-inhabited, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And especially here, east of the Mississippi, we got tons of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're everywhere. And, you know, another one, for example, is restoring passenger rail service in America.
Amen.
The infrastructure for fixing it is lying out there rusting in the rain. It would put scores of thousands of people to work at meaningful jobs at many different levels. And the fact that we're not even talking about it shows how unserious we are. So what's happening now is that we are... Well, the most striking and impressive thing about our situation is the failure to construct a coherent consensus about what's happening to us and what we're going to do about it. And until we're able to do that, we're going to keep on sleepwalking and floundering around and asking for solutions to keep running Walmart, and we're not going to really be addressing the right thing.
So how are we going to come out of denial? I mean, how...
Well, we might not. As I said, life is tragic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, history doesn't care. History is merciless. History doesn't care whether we succeed or fail.
Exactly.
History doesn't care if we can man up and face reality. You know, there was a famous utterance that was made by some Republican politician in the last decade who said that the American way of life is non-negotiable. Remember that?
Yeah.
It was either George Bush or Cheney or one of those guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, the problem with that idea is that if you don't negotiate the circumstances that the universe sends your way, you get assigned a new negotiating partner automatically. And your partner is named Reality.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it will negotiate for you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have to be in the room.
Well,
you can go. You can go elsewhere and do internet pornography. You know, you can play blackjack. You know, you can do. You can sit. You can eat Velveeta sandwiches and watch football.
It doesn't matter.
But, you know, and you talk about reality, and there's a very famous risk manager out here that does the lecture circuit in California, Gordon Graham. And one of the things he talks about is the significant emotional event or the significant events that causes sudden change. And I think in California, we're about at that point because we are broke in California. Nobody will actually get on television and say we are broke, but they are dancing around that. I think we're making a last-ditch effort to try to get some money out of the Fed.
Well, you've been successfully able to sort of paper it over and hold things together with twine and baling wire and
but
duct tape.
It's all broken loose, and now all the people that have been subsidized by this, and these, we're talking millions of people at this point, and corporations and business and government, yeah, and everything that's tied to all of this together, is going to collapse in some form, and it's at that point that we're going to have some significant emotional events here in California, and the long emergency might not be so long at that point.
Well, there's an analog to this in physics. You know, it's called phase change. And what that means is that, you know, a condition stays the same for a period of time, and then all of a sudden it slips and something happens, and, excuse me, something happens, and all of a sudden things are drastically different. For example, water. You know, water is the same. Water behaves the same as a liquid, whether it's 200 degrees or 160 degrees or 93 degrees or 52 degrees. But you get down to 31 degrees, and all of a sudden something happens.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it changes its character. And we're going to see phase change in politics and social attitudes and behavior in the United States. And, you know, it may be so sudden and traumatic that, that it will be very disturbing for people and possibly destructive. So this is not something we want to happen, but these are the choices that we made by doing exactly what we were talking about a few minutes ago, you know, by sweeping our problems under the rug, sleepwalking, being clueless, not being serious, not paying attention, not manning up.
Not taking the break when we need to.
our engineer over here is having a small seizure, Jim, so we got to take a break. We're visiting today with James Howard Kunstler, the author of The Long Emergency, Surviving the Converging Catastrophes of the 21st Century, and also a second book, Geography to Nowhere, of Nowhere, I should say. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working the board. Community Alert, not if but when, positive preparation for disaster. KZSB AM 1290, or Santa Barbara News Press Radio and newspress.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
The views expressed on Community Alert are not necessarily those of the staff, management, ownership, or advertisers of this station.
Join 7,000 professionals at the most comprehensive fire rescue and EMS event on the West Coast. That's Firehouse World Fire Rescue EMS, February 28th through March 4th, 2010. The San Diego Convention Center in San Diego, California. Gain access to 350 exhibitors showcasing the latest in fire, rescue, and EMS products and services. Meet one-on-one with representatives from some of the best companies in the industry. Discover new products, services, and technologies. Learn more about extending the life of your existing products and equipment, and save time and money during the purchasing process by seeing everything you need in one place. Also, co-located with the California State Firefighters Association 88th Conference, this is Firehouse World, February 28th through March 4th, 2010, San Diego Convention Center in San Diego. For further information, visit the website firehouseworld.com, firehouseworld.com, or to register, csfa.net. That's csfa.net. That's Firehouse World, February 28th through March 4th, 2010, San Diego Convention Center in San Diego.
Welcome back to Community Alert, folks. Our final segment. I'm Ted Adams, and my co-host is Mike Williams, and we're visiting today with James Howard Kunstler, who's the author of The Long Emergency, Surviving the Converging Catastrophes of the 21st Century. Jim, thanks so much, and let's see what you got for us here.
Well,
wrap up.
I wrote a novel after I finished The Long Emergency. I wrote a novel set in the post-oil American future. It's called World Made by Hand, published by the Atlantic Monthly Press. Came out in 2008, and it's in paperback now, and it's a ripping yarn about the post-oil future. I just finished the sequel to it, which is called The Witch of Hebron, and it's coming out in the fall of 2010. And I have a website. It's KUNSTLER.com. I do a weekly podcast with my pal Duncan Crary, and we talk about many of these issues. And it comes out every Thursday. You can subscribe to it on a feed, and it'll be pumped automatically into your iTunes. And I write a weekly blog every Monday morning on my website. My blog comes out before 10 o'clock in the morning Eastern time. So for those of you in California, it'll be there when you pour your coffee out.
Cool.
And that's what I do. You know, I write these books and I do the podcast and the blog, and I do the college lectures, and that's what I do.
And we can find you at Kunstler.com and find track all these things down.
Yes, you can.
Well, thank you very much, sir. We have to go. We're at the end here. I appreciate your time. James Howard Kunstler, The Long Emergency, Surviving the Converging Catastrophes of the 21st Century. This has been Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan wishing you a good day. KZSB AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio and NewsPress.com. We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening.
This has been Community Alert, produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, in association with the Santa Barbara County Fire Safe Council. Community Alert is proud to be part of the Orpala Fund Initiative, Aware and Prepare, a community partnership to strengthen emergency and disaster readiness. If you would like to help support the program, you may send your tax-deductible donations to the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. That's the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. Comments regarding this Community Alert program may be sent online to community@wildlandresidents.org. That's community@wildlandresidents.org. Or you may call 964-7194. That's 964-7194. Production assistance for Community Alert is provided by Richard Dugan and Jim Williams. Community Alert, not if, but when disaster strikes.